education for Americans to give them the capacity to make their decisions from one day to the next about how to keep themselves happier and healthier and how to extend life as much as possible. I also oversee the commissioned corps of the United States Public Health Service, which is a service of 6,000 uniformed officers who work all around the world to advance health and protect the future of our children. I know that the officers who are here at APHA don't quite look like this, but our service has gone back starting at the end of the 1700s, and I know there are a few officers in this room here, but I want to make sure that as you travel around APHA in this convention center, when you see an officer, you stop them and thank them for the incredible work that they do. We are placed in 800 work sites all around the world, protecting people from HIV infection, trying to halt the spread of the epidemic. We're working to provide health care to Native Americans, and we're working to assure the safety and the efficacy of the United States food supply as well, among hundreds of other very, very critical jobs. But before I get into the main topic that I want to talk to you about, which is prevention of childhood obesity, I want to talk a little bit, just a minute, about what our vision is for healthcare in the United States. And first, about value-driven healthcare. We've been talking about a critical need for change in the U.S. healthcare system, and very, very important that in the future we have a system which is driven by value. Today, in every city in the U.S., consumers know more about the automobiles they purchase than about the quality of their health care. Secretary Leavitt has been leading an effort at HHS to bring about a future in which consumers are able to find out which hospital in their area has the highest success rate for a particular procedure that they want to get, that they can compare doctors not just on what they charge, but also on the quality of the care that they give, and that they would approach healthcare like we do any other major purpose, by consulting an impartial source of information on quality and cost. We've made some progress in these areas over the last few years, and I fully expect that no matter what happens next week, we will continue to make important progress in this critical area. I want to move now to some of the priorities I've been working on as the Acting Surgeon General and how they fit in to what we're talking about. The first priority that I'm spending every day thinking about is disease prevention. You all know in this organization that we spend the vast proportion of our healthcare resources in this country treating preventable diseases. Prevention is really the cornerstone of everything I do, and it's premised on the concept that we really need to change the way that we think about public health and healthcare in the United States. This is really a profound cultural, societal change to move from a treatment-oriented framework in which too little time and effort is spent on preventing diseases to more prevention-centered, in which healthy lifestyles are promoted and sustained. Chronic disease prevention should be our number one priority in this country. The medical care costs of people with chronic diseases consume more than 75% of this nation's $1.4 trillion medical care every year. A modest increase in the amount of money that we spend on prevention, the amount of resources that we spend on preventing chronic diseases, will not just, of course, save lives, but will also save precious healthcare dollars that can be better spent on other areas. Another key priority that I'm working on, and I know is very, very important for everyone attending this meeting, is healthcare disparities and health disparities in this country. While overall, over the last few decades, the health of this nation has improved, not all populations have benefited equally, and too many Americans and minority groups still suffer from illnesses at a disproportionate rate. Just a few examples of this, because I know how familiar you are with it. In 2004, African American men were 30% more likely to die of heart disease as compared to white men. African American Americans are also 50% more likely than whites to have high blood pressure. The American Native and Alaska Native population, the infant mortality is 51% higher than in non-Hispanic whites. These numbers go on and on. They're just a few examples. It is absolutely imperative that we change. It's not going to happen unless everyone in this room and everyone around the country involved in healthcare and public health are focused on this. In my tenure as acting Surgeon General, I focused on some specific activities. I want to take you through them very, very quickly. The initiatives include, number one, the prevention of preterm birth, number two, the prevention of underage drinking, and number three, as you've heard, childhood overweight and obesity. Just a second on preterm birth. There are nearly 500,000 babies born in the United States preterm every year, and what is most remarkable about this 500,000 number is that every single year it continues to rise in the United States. It's a major cause of infant death and places infants at an increased risk of serious lifelong disabilities such as cerebral palsy, intellectual disabilities, and sensory impairments. We held a Surgeon General's conference on preterm birth just this last spring. We developed an agenda that represents just a first step towards reducing the considerable emotional, the considerable financial toll the preterm exacts in this country on lost lives, disability, and increased healthcare costs. I'm really, really pleased to have been working with the March of Dimes and other outside groups on this important initiative. We're coming up with a report to Congress, which I hope we'll get over to them soon. And again, looking forward to working with many of you on that priority. The next issue that I want to touch on very, very quickly, an issue all around this world, is underage drinking. And I'm so pleased to see a really robust agenda of APHA's alcohol and tobacco and other drugs sessions on this topic at this meeting. We know that alcohol dependence rates are highest among young people between the ages of 18 and 20, and this is the drug of choice for America's teenagers, used more than other illicit drugs. An estimated 10.8 million young people between the ages of 12 and 20 are current drinkers. Those who start drinking before the age of 15 are 5 times more likely to have alcohol problems later in life than those who begin drinking later. At age 18, more than 70% of teens have had a drink in this country. One of the most shocking statistics, and you can throw them around for a long time on underage drinking, is that there are 5,000 deaths of people under the age of 21 every year linked to underage drinking. We know that it increases the risk of physical and sexual assault and can also lead to risky sexual behavior. We also know that underage drinking has impacts on the brain that we probably didn't understand 20 years ago. We know it can result in mild brain damage. So I've been continuing the work of my predecessor, Admiral Moritsugu, traveling around the country from state to state, talking about underage drinking, and I hope to continue that work. So let me now turn and move to the major priority that I've been working on, and that's prevention of childhood overweight and obesity. I want to start with a quick video clip. Just a minute. Can you all hear that? Yes? No? In the back? No.
Never heard a word I say.
All over America, entire families are backsliding. We're no longer just sedentary, we're stationary, and that's bad news for your bones. At any age, bones need weight-bearing activity to grow strong and stay strong. So go outside, take the steps, play with the dog. Just get up, get out, get moving.
Never keep your bones that way.
Service message from the American Academy of Orthopedic Surgeons.
So that's just to make sure we're all awake and get us in the right frame of mind for this. Childhood overweight and obesity is a challenge that cuts across all geographic, socioeconomic, and other borders in this country today. There's been a startling trend over the last few decades in childhood obesity, and that's one of the most amazing things about the whole All right, good. So sharing information about this is one of the things that I think is most important for the work that I'm doing. As we know, overweight and obese children, as they are aging, are more likely to have risk factors associated with cardiovascular disease, high blood pressure, high cholesterol, and type 2 diabetes. What is this going to mean for us in the future? It's going to mean more young people on dialysis, more young people with disability, more people with blindness, and so many other health outcomes related to overweight and obesity. And I know this is very dangerous doing, talking about this right before the election, but on this map, the red states are bad and the blue states are good, and you can see just between 1996 and 2006, the incredible change in self-reported overweight and obesity rates. This is looking at BMI over normal around the United States. So this has happened right under our eyes. In response to this, I've been traveling around the country. I've visited more than 30 states. My goal has been to share information and talk about adoption of best practices on a community level to prevent obesity, working with local organizations on three major priorities. The first, this is just the places I visited. First is to get and stay active. The second is to eat nutritiously. And the third is to make healthy choices once we have the information. I've been working on roundtable discussions, meeting with community groups, meeting with faith-based groups, talking about the work that people can do in local communities to change policies, to encourage healthy eating, to change the design and work in each community around this United States. We've accomplished a great deal so far with this work, and I want to encourage every single person here to do what we can to continue to move forward. We really need coordinated national action, and we need to bring non-traditional public health practitioners more to the table than we have in the past. We have to recognize that government policies in many different areas, really without being named, are actually health and public health policy. This has to do with agricultural policy, transportation and housing policy, and education policy as well. We need to look at all of these aspects, particularly with the change of administration and new leadership coming in, to look about what we can do on a national level to change many of the policies that have been in place for a great deal of time that have led to the development of this bad outcome. We have to recruit parents, families, community organizations, and really every single area of our society to see what they can do. And it's not going to be successful without these partnerships getting formed more than they have in the past. And I want to just give a couple of examples of partnerships that I've been very, very impressed with before we move on to the next speaker. The school district in Austin, Texas, they couldn't pass a rule to take sweetened beverages out of their schools. So instead, the school district took it upon themselves. The parent groups really stood up and said, this is not going to work. And the school district passed guidelines that would remove highly sweetened foods and beverages from the vending machines in the schools all over Austin, Texas. Another great example is in the state of Florida. They put in a program called Big Fat Industries and Kids Bite Back. This is a public awareness campaign in Pinellas County, Florida. Participants, and these are kids, were taught about food marketing practices practice and good health science. They were taught about how to recognize the marketing messages that were being directed at them and techniques to increase their physical activity and healthy nutrition choices. There's also a great program in Baltimore, Maryland, and it's been replicated at different places around the country called Healthy Stores. The goal of this is to improve childhood overweight and obesity in low-income communities through culturally appropriate store-based interventions that increase the supply of healthy foods and promote their purchases. There are nonprofit groups that are really focused on this as well. The Robert Wood Johnson Foundation has committed, as of April of last year, $500 million over a five-year period to combat childhood obesity in the United States, which is one of the largest commitments by any foundation to date. So we don't all have the resources, we don't all have the breadth of Robert Wood Johnson and some of these other groups, but on a local level we can each do our part. I know we have to move on to the next speaker, but I just want to mention lastly the physical activity guidelines that were released by the federal government just a few weeks ago. These are the first federal physical activity guidelines giving the message that wellness is a hard-won habit and that physical activity is absolutely critical. The adoption of a healthy lifestyle starts with very simple steps, and I would encourage all of you to look at this on the web and you can see what the new federal guidelines say about physical activity that each person in the United States can do. So in closing, whether we're talking about improving the healthcare system in the United States, getting a handle on the obesity epidemic, we know that dramatic change is slow, even in the best of circumstances. But we have and we will continue to make progress thanks to commitments of people like you in APHA, members of other organizations as well. Every single person in this room can be an advocate for disease prevention, for health literacy, for preventing childhood overweight and obesity, and for increasing public health activities in our communities and increasing physical activity. So I look forward to continuing to work with the member groups in APHA, many of your sections, and many of you individually. Thank you very, very much for your patience. I think we better move on. Yep.